Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Can you smell that?
What is it?
Revenge is in the air.
Ah, sweet smell of revenge.
That's right. So if you're like us, you've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so spoiler alert.
Yeah, we might be talking a little bit about that. So if you're not caught up on it, maybe fast forward a few minutes.
Yeah, because it was just too exciting to pass up. So, yeah, give us a couple minutes there and come back if you haven't watched the latest episode of Game of Thrones, or if you haven't watched it at all and you're contemplating starting the series from the first one.
Yeah.
And watching all 8 seasons.
And if you watch the series, just read the books, too. They're really good. If you want to have, like, 5 or 6 pages all about different kinds of food that people are eating at feasts.
Why read a book when you can watch a movie? I've never understood that.
Why would you do that?
When people, it just ruins the movie to go read the book afterwards. So just watch the movie. Forget about the books. that's my advice.
Well, Arya Stark, she is set on revenge.
Yes, she has a whole list. She doesn't just decide somebody. She's got a list of everybody that has wronged her, and they make it on the list, and she has slowly but surely been working her way through. Just ask the Frey people.
Yeah, Walder Frey. They
and his whole family.
Yeah, they met their end pretty nicely from Arya Stark. But
talk about a dish best served cold. She served him a meat pie made out of his sons that he ate unknowingly before she slit his throat.
It's like a Scott Tinerman from South Park.
Man, that's pretty good. That was pretty good. And then of course, she got the ultimate revenge against someone that I don't even know if he even made it on the list. He made it on the list. I don't know that he was actually written down.
Who's that?
The Night King.
Yeah, well, I don't think he was on the list.
That's what I say. I don't think he was actually written down, but I think he was on the list one way or another.
The target of opportunity.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. But he had killed a lot of her people, though.
That's true.
So, I mean, it might have just been in her mind, and all his people were chasing her all around that house.
That's true as well.
So, well, that castle is more of a castle than a house.
House Stark, Castle Winterfell.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, that was such a surprise when she came out of there and did that. And you know, and here was Jon Snow pinned down by the dragon. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, he's got to get out of there. He's got to just make a run for it. He's the only one that could kill him. And then I started thinking about it. I said, the only other person that could get him is Arya. That's the only other person that could end the Night King. And all of a sudden, they show him walking up there to Bran, and here she came out of nowhere, flying from the sky and did it. And I said, I called it! Here she is!
When Melisandre gave her the pep talk there for a little bit, mm-hmm. I knew she was going to be the one that was going to do it.
Well, I didn't know. That didn't tip me off. It was when Jon Snow kept getting pinned down. I thought the only other one capable of killing him would be Arya. And then she did. And it kind of upsets me that there were people saying that it shouldn't have been her. That should have been Jon Snow, or that, you know, that diminished how bad the Night King was because she killed him. I say, forget that. She's been training for years as an assassin.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, she had the sword fight that they did in the sparring with Brienne, with Lady Brienne of Tarth.
Sir
Brienne of Tarth.
Now.
Yeah.
Spoilers everywhere.
And she won using that same move.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, yeah, she earned it. Don't anybody say she didn't. She earned it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was blind for a while to learn how to fight better.
Yeah.
So she went through a lot.
She did. She did. She absolutely earned it.
So these are revenge murders.
That's right.
So we thought it'd be a fun episode to talk a little about murder, because I don't think we actually have ever talked just about murder on this show.
No, I don't think so. I think we've touched on it like cannibalism is kind of like murder.
Yeah, we've talked about it a few times kind of in passing, but never an episode dedicated just to murder.
So it's everything you ever wondered about murder and how to get away with it. No, there's already a show called that. We can't be that show.
This is not about how to get away with murder, because as a lawyer, I can't tell people how to get away with murder. That's not my job. That would be against my lawyer code.
Can you write it down?
No.
Oh.
No. No, this is about...
You could tell me and I'll tell people.
This is about the legal definition.
I have no obligation to anyone.
This is about the legal definition of different kinds of murder and the different degrees and defenses and things like that.
And how to get away with them.
No, not how to get away with it.
How to get around it. You know that Google on their, Siri or somebody?
Where to bury a dead body?
Yeah, they actually had that on there. So, and they were like, how did that get on there? And the guys goofing around in there where they put that together, some of the nerdy tech guys, they put that in there as a joke.
Yeah.
They had to remove that.
Yeah, I think somebody actually asked it and then that somebody actually followed its directions.
Yeah, to hide a body. That's right.
Well, so now in the United States, the law about murder is going to vary a lot by where you are. Most jurisdictions have kind of different hierarchy of acts of murder. And you have first-degree murder, which is also encompassing usually felony murder, and those are the more serious ones. You have second-degree murder, and then you also have what are called the manslaughter, like involuntary manslaughter and voluntary manslaughter. And they're not as serious. Those are usually there's some sort of excuse as to why it took place.
They're probably as serious to the guy that got killed.
Probably so.
He's just as dead.
To the decedent.
One way or another.
To the decedent, it probably doesn't matter too much.
No. He's hoping somebody gets revenge for him one way or another, whatever they get tried for.
Now, the interesting thing is that we've talked about common law before, right?
Right.
And so common law is what is tested on the bar exam for the most part.
It's from the old English versions.
That's right. It doesn't really exist anywhere, but it is used on the bar exam.
It doesn't exist, but it is used.
Yeah. It's been handed down from the English tradition. And the process that was handed down is through what's called precedent and stare decisis. And basically, what stare decisis is a doctrine or instruction, and that basically it's used as a instruction in all different legal issues, and it means the court looks to the past cases to look at their decisions, and that's kind of the precedent that they follow. So that's how common law originated, through precedent and stare decisis.
Okay, so it says, thou shalt not kill. Is that where it came from?
No, that would be tracing it way back.
It's always been a no-no, Mike. I don't care where it's from. It's always been a no-no.
But the common law definition of murder is pretty awesome. It's, I don't know. I kind of like it. Probably because when I learned it studying for the bar exam, the guy who was doing the instruction on it, he had these voices he would make during it to kind of help you remember the different elements of it. But
do you remember the voices? Are you going to do them?
I don't think I can do them justice.
Oh, was that too much pressure?
It was too much pressure.
Okay.
So common law murder is the unlawful killing of a human being with malice aforethought. Malice aforethought is proven in four different ways. Number one, the intent to kill. Number two, intent to inflict great bodily injury. Number three, depraved heart killings. And number four, felony murder. I think
depraved heart killings?
Yeah, I think I nailed it. That's how he said it.
Why is that one the only one that got emphasized?
That's the only one I remember.
Oh.
Depraved heart.
Depraved heart.
Yeah, so basically, depraved heart is where the defendant commits an act that, even though they know their act runs an unusually high risk of causing death or bodily injury, they go ahead and do it anyway. So it's kind of like
they're in a frenzy.
Yeah, well, not really a frenzy. But they are aware of the dangerous thing that they're doing, but they just really don't care.
Well, what about the other ones? They don't either, do they?
What's that?
The other three, they don't either, do they?
Well, I mean, intent to kill, I mean, you are trying to kill somebody, so it doesn't really matter if you have a depraved heart or not. I mean, it's probably a given you have a depraved heart if you're trying to kill somebody.
Yeah.
But depraved heart in this sense means basically that you're being reckless.
Okay.
It's also can be called like depraved indifference to human life.
Like if you just pulled out a gun and started shooting it around at nobody in particular just because you wanted to shoot your gun.
Yeah, and it's like, well, I wasn't trying to kill anybody. I was just shooting my gun.
Yeah, I just felt like I needed to shoot my gun.
Well, obviously by shooting your gun, you have a depraved heart and you have the intent to kill.
But it's my Second Amendment right to shoot my gun whenever and wherever I want. Just read it right there in the Constitution.
Now, the difference is that this common law murder, depraved heart, was just murder. But now, basically in most jurisdictions, depraved heart murder can be second-degree murder or manslaughter. And so that's typically how it's couched in the present day. But at common law, it was basically just all fell into the one big sweeping name of murder.
So they didn't have manslaughter and stuff like that?
No, they did not at common law. A good example of a depraved heart would probably be like if you were, if you went to a bar, got really, really intoxicated, then jumped in your car, drunk, and then drove and then killed somebody. So that would be kind of probably similar to like a depraved heart, like involuntary manslaughter type thing.
But they could say you made the conscious decision to drink.
That's right. You made the conscious decision. So
it's voluntary manslaughter.
You made, no, it's not how it works. You made the conscious decision to
drink and drive.
To drink and drive, and therefore you're basically not, you don't care about human life essentially because you put everyone at risk by doing that. So that's your depraved heart. The way you can kind of look at the depraved heart type instances is that basically it's pretty much just some sort of reckless behavior where you would have some sort of negligence or for doing it in real, you know, in life if you didn't kill somebody.
Like the guy that threw the 3-year-old off the balcony in the mall or whatever.
Yeah.
That was pretty reckless.
It's pretty reckless, but I think you might basically jack that up to probably a first-degree murder.
Well, except that the kid's going to be okay. Well, it's a miracle, but he's going to be okay. But you know what? I don't think he should get any less of a sentence.
Attempted murder, then.
Yeah, attempted murder, but he should still get life or whatever because he tried to kill him. Just because the kid miraculously lived wasn't because of him.
That's absolutely true.
I'll never give up on that. That's always been one of my pet peeves. It's just like somebody shoots somebody. You shoot them 5 times and walk away and leave them there, and the guy lives. And you don't get tried for murder?
Right.
It was attempted murder. Attempted, he tried like hell to murder the hell out of him, and the guy lived. That doesn't mean he should get any less.
It's not my fault he sucks. I don't know.
Man, that just burns me up.
I think basically wherever the act actually doesn't happen, it's probably right to have it be a little bit less. But it still should be pretty heavy, I think.
Yeah, very heavy. Very heavy. Like, don't see the light of day. Put him under a rock.
Now, the common law is basically what I was talking about, those definitions before. But then, like I said, each jurisdiction is going to have their own statutory definitions of what murder is. And so the first one is called first-degree murder. And that's the most serious, as you might have guessed.
Yes, from watching TV shows, I've figured that one out.
And generally, and these are all going to change state by state, but
that's the one you can get the death penalty for.
It is, if it's a death penalty state.
Right. So, but I mean, you can't get it for second-degree murder.
No. First-degree murder is generally the only crime where you have capital offense like that, punishable by death.
Right.
Now, first-degree murder is murder in the intentional killing with malice aforethought, premeditation, and deliberation. So basically, the person had to kind of lie in wait for somebody. They had to plan it. You might see, like, if they poisoned somebody or did something along those lines. If, you know, so basically what Arya did to Walder Frey, that's probably first-degree murder, my friend.
Nobody will convict her.
Probably not. They had it coming.
That's right.
But that's the key in the first-degree murder is basically the malice aforethought, the premeditation and the deliberation.
I'd pin a medal on her.
Now, something else that is typically a first-degree murder is what we've talked about before is the felony murder rule, and we've talked about that before. Do you remember what that is?
That would be like if you went in to rob a bank, you and an accomplice went in to rob a bank, and the police shot your accomplice, you could actually be charged with murder because of him getting killed.
Yeah, somebody dies during the commission of a felony.
Yeah.
Now, it could be your accomplice, or it could be somebody who was there at the bank.
A bystander.
Bystander, doesn't matter. And felony murder is typically looked at as a first-degree murder as well. And that kind of makes sense if you think about it, because you're looking at it, and even though it might not be something that you really planned out or tried to poison somebody or really had this complicated plan, you were committing a serious crime, a felony, and someone died as a result of it. So that kind of jives with the whole depraved heart type situation from common law.
Mm-hmm.
And felony murder is kind of more of a derivative of common law as opposed to a typical statutory construction. So I think that's where it kind of comes from, and that's why you have that as much a higher class. And I think it makes sense, too.
So, like, if you, like, the two guys get in a shootout with the police and a couple of policemen die, and only one of the one of the guys dies, one of the bad guys dies, the other one could be charged with the murder of the cops, even if he didn't shoot him.
Yeah, it could be. You could charge them with multiple felony murders based upon that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all stemming from the same instance, but you could have different counts for murder of person A, murder of person B, murder of person C.
Yeah.
So, and it'd be really weird if their names were just A, B, and C like that.
Yeah, just one letter.
Now, the second-degree murder is something that's not quite first-degree murder. And the way you can always tell second-degree murder is that basically, if it's not first-degree murder, it's probably second-degree.
Yeah, they pleaded it down.
Well, they didn't plead it down, but it's just it's a lesser penalty always, and it also has something to do with one of the elements of the first-degree murder not being met.
Well, usually it has to do with not really being premeditated. You just acted.
That's true, yeah. I mean, there can be a certain kind of response to it. But, again, it doesn't have one of the classic murder defenses that we're going to talk about either.
Like if you got in a fight with a guy and you were sitting there and he beat the heck out of you and you ran over and jumped in your car and ran over him and killed him, probably wouldn't be first-degree murder.
Probably not, because that's still kind of the heat-of-the-moment type situation.
Right.
So you really don't have time to...
Yeah, if you went home and thought about it and said, you know what? I'm going to get in my Pontiac and I'm going to run back down there and I'm going to run over that guy's ass. Now you're probably looking at murder one.
Yeah, and where are you going to get a Pontiac? I don't think they make those anymore.
Well, that's why this guy's in this situation. He's still driving a Pontiac.
Now, do you know what that's called when you have a situation like that? Then you leave, and before you go get in your Pontiac?
Malice aforethought.
No, that's called a cooling off period.
Oh, you had a cooling off period, and then you came back and killed him anyway.
Yeah, if there's a cooling off period, that's one way that you can kind of show a bit more premeditation to it, because you're not exactly in that heat of the moment.
Yeah, you can't leave and go think about it and say, you know what? I think I'm going to go kill that guy for that. You just have to do it right there. Pick up a rock and hit him in the head.
Now, manslaughter is something that's kind of a lesser of murder, although not to the dead person, as we've already discussed.
Yes, he is still just as much dead.
It is lesser. There's two kinds, the voluntary and involuntary. And in some states, they don't call it manslaughter, they call it third-degree murder. So they,
really? Yeah, I've never heard that term.
Yeah, well, they don't do it here. But in some states, it's actually called third-degree murder.
But I've never seen that on TV either. I watch a lot of TV crime things.
Yeah, you do. I'll testify to that.
That's where I get most of my law knowledge from.
And so if you know, like, basically that something is kind of a heat of passion type killing, then basically you want to look at it, evaluate it probably as a manslaughter type situation. Just because... basically, you're not going to have those elements that are of murder. The malice aforethought, the premeditation, the deliberation. It's generally something that's a little bit less.
Well, I think in the old days, they used to argue that it was almost like a temporary insanity. Like a man walks in and finds another man in bed with his wife, and he just pulls out a gun and shoots the man in a fit of jealousy and rage.
Yeah, if they catch them in flagrante delicto.
Yeah, if it was in Fragante, in her delecto, is that what you're saying? That would be a bad thing, I think.
I think so.
I'm not sure what that term means, but I think I've heard you use it before, and I think I can tell what it means from the way it sounds. It's kind of like one of them onomatopoeia words.
It's the act of something wrong, like it generally has the connotation of people having sex.
Yes. I figured that. It sounded sexual, like your sexual couch.
So voluntary manslaughter is essentially a killing that would possibly be murder, but there has been some sort of provocation, like somebody beating on you, and insufficient cooling time. So basically, this is when you didn't actually go home to get in your Pontiac, but you just jumped in your Pontiac right there, and the guy was kind of like right there, and he wasn't actually a threat to you at that time, so it couldn't be really a self-defense type situation, but you've fired up that GTO and ran him over anyway.
Right. It was a Tempest.
A Tempest?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know.
A 68 Pontiac Tempest.
Did it have posi traction?
No, but it had a great big indestructible nose on the front.
There you go. Now, the other kind is involuntary manslaughter, and that's generally, like I had said, when there's some sort of criminal negligence during the commission of a wrongful act. So that would be more along your lines of the drunk driving when you kill somebody. I mean, although it was a voluntary intoxication, it was an involuntary manslaughter that took place when you drunk drivingly hit the person in your 68 Tempest with the indestructible nose.
Yeah, it doesn't even keep blood on it. When you run over them, the nose just sheds it right off.
Now, some places actually have a misdemeanor manslaughter crime.
What?
Yeah, which I've actually never encountered. But that's basically when there's a killing, when the defendant's engaged in some sort of non-dangerous felony or misdemeanor. So it's even a further designation of less. But I've never encountered that.
That would seem like it would be almost specific to something happening. I mean, what are the chances of that? You're doing something that's not reckless, has no chance of hurting anyone, and you kill somebody.
Yeah.
What is that? You know, you're riding your bike on the sidewalk, and an old lady steps out in front of you, and it kills her.
And because you're not supposed to be riding your bike on the sidewalk?
Yeah, or even if you did, maybe they just say you were riding it recklessly.
I don't know.
I mean, even if it was okay.
Now, there are defenses to all the different crimes of murder.
And I got one.
What's that?
What if you opened your door into a bike lane and a speeding cyclist was coming down the bike lane and hit your door and did a double flip over your door and landed in the middle of traffic and got run over by a semi?
Now, are you driving?
Yeah, you opened your door.
And you're moving while you did it.
No, you're parked.
You're parked?
But you opened your door into a bike lane.
So essentially what you did is you saw this cyclist coming.
No, you didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
No, you didn't. You were just getting out of your car and you opened your door and boom, the cyclist hits it and gets crunched. Wouldn't that be maybe a misdemeanor thing because you're supposed to check?
Is it against the law to not check before you open your door?
I think you're supposed to, you know, that's why when they have a clearly marked bicycle lane, Taylor could tell us more about that, but if you have a clearly marked bicycle lane on the street, you are supposed to give bicyclists a right-of-way in that lane.
Probably so. I could see that, I guess. I don't know. It depends on the statutory construction. Are you saying that that's a misdemeanor to interfere with a bicyclist's progress?
Probably so. Right. I don't think it's a felony.
So it's a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
And then basically, as a result of that...
A death took place. Yeah.
I guess I could see that as being a misdemeanor manslaughter.
I'm just trying to figure out some circumstance where that would fit in, where any kind of murder would be, or, you know, killing somebody would be a misdemeanor. Or maybe if you just didn't like him a lot, if everybody agreed, look, that person, we're all better off that he's dead, then they'd maybe make it a misdemeanor.
Well, that's actually a defense.
Yeah?
That's the needed killing defense.
Needed killing?
Yeah.
Well, they did do that here in Huntington for a guy back about 25 years ago.
Who's that?
Somebody killed him, and they dumped the body off of the 6th Street Bridge into the Ohio River, and when they found the body and started investigating, and the guy had killed him, everybody talked about all these people came in and testified what a bully he was, all these people had harassed, he'd beaten women, domestic violence, and the world is a better place without him. Finally, the jury agreed, and all they did was fine the guy for littering because he dumped the body in the river.
That sounds like an urban legend.
It's true!
What was the name of this case?
You think I'd know the name?
I'm just saying.
I barely know my own name.
I'm just saying, I'm a lawyer here in this town.
Well, talk to one of the old lawyers here in this town, and they'll tell you about it. It's a real case.
They've told me some things, but I'm going to ask the oldest repository of judicial knowledge that I know.
Okay, and you ask them. Because I think that was shortly after we moved back here, and we moved back here in 91. I think it was right around that time.
Well, I am not familiar with that. That sounds like an urban legend to me.
True thing. I wouldn't steer you wrong.
Did a friend of yours tell you about it?
No, it was in the paper.
I'm just not buying this.
It was in the paper. That's where I read about it. I followed it.
Well, you know what? That would be a clear case, though, don't you? If the jury did that and you argued that.
Jury nullification?
It would be jury nullification because that's not a justified defense to kill somebody.
They were just a bad person and the world's better without them?
No.
You just said that was one. He deserved it.
I was being facetious. I was joking.
Oh, well, I thought you meant that was a real defense. It worked that time.
Well, it sounds like Josie Wales, what some Josie Wales would say. Yeah, it needed killing.
We all died a little in that damn war.
But the actual real defenses to murder, intoxication, insanity, self-defense, or defense of others. So those are basically your defenses to these different things. Now, intoxication, that's probably not going to be a great defense for a lot of reasons, but it could be used for a first-degree murder defense.
Because, sure, it'll lessen it.
Yeah, because it shows basically this guy was so out of his mind, there was no way he had the required mental state or the premeditation to have first-degree murder.
Right.
So, you know, then that's not necessarily a bad argument to get somebody off of a first-degree murder conviction, especially if you're in a capital state where they might kill the guy.
That's true.
So, insanity, now that's the one you talked about. Insanity is where, again, due to some sort of mental defect that you are not able to fully comprehend or understand or form the premeditation to commit the crime. So,
and I'd always heard America is the only place that has that as a defense.
Insanity.
I don't know if that's true, but I've always heard that.
I don't think it would necessarily be true, because anywhere where you have a body of law which says that you have to have some sort of mental state to commit a crime, I think you would have to have some sort of insanity defense for it.
Well, I think that what they do is they have a lesser degree of murder, but you don't get to be set free.
Well, people that plead insanity are not set free.
Well, right. They go to the insane asylum or whatever.
Generally, until at which point that they are... I guess if you're found not guilty by reason of insanity, then yeah, you're actually found not guilty, then you're sentenced to some sort of
facility to
get sane.
Yeah, and but, so you get sane 6 months later and you got away with murder.
Yeah. Well, generally what happens is the person doesn't have the ability to stand trial either. So what they'll do is they'll commit the person... pending
until such time
they become sane, and then at that point they'll go forward with it.
Yeah, but you still can't go back and say, okay, he's sane now we're going to hold him responsible for what he did back then when he was insane.
No, not if they were found not guilty, but if you never have a trial on it, then they certainly could. And generally murder has no statute of limitations either, so I mean you could just come back and file again at some other point. So
yeah, and I think they were more generous with that in the past than they are now, because I mean there's a lot of things, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer was convicted of murder, and I'm sure that they used insanity as a defense because he was eating people. You, not normal people, eat people.
Right. You could say that, but at the same time, I think you can counterbalance that by showing how meticulous he was, how he committed the crimes,
right,
everything he did to do that. You can say, well, this person, they may be mentally unstable, but they certainly understood what they were doing and how they were going about doing it.
Yeah, otherwise you're just encouraging people, well, I killed him, now I got to make myself look crazy, so I might as well take a bite.
Well, it's either I take a bite of him or I rub poop on my face.
Gotta do something.
I guess I'll just take a bite. I don't like poop on my face.
I'll go to prison and get the name Feecy Face. I don't want to do that.
Now, we did talk about in one of our prior episodes that necessity is not a defense to murder.
But it is the mother of invention.
And that was in the R.V. Dudley case, and that was the cabin boy case where the cabin boy was eaten, and they tried to say that basically they were all stranded on a lifeboat.
We're all going to starve here unless we eat poor Douglas.
Yeah, so they had to eat the cabin boy.
He's got a gamey leg. I don't want to eat a gamey leg.
The interesting thing about that, and I think I probably brought this up when we first talked about that, is that the name of the boat was the Mignonette, and it was also the name of a Avett Brothers album, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first saw that, I didn't even put two and two together. I was like, that name sounds familiar. Where's that from? And then I was like, wait a second. They named that album after a cannibal boat.
Well, at least it wasn't the Minnow. That would have meant they all ate Gilligan.
It was only a 3-hour tour.
It's a 3-course meal.
So the important thing, like when you're looking at all these different murder statutes and things like that and the different elements, is you always break it down to the two different things that we always talk about whenever you have a criminal act. You remember what those are?
Intent and motive, or motive and opportunity.
No, I mean those are very good things to help prove your case.
Yeah.
But the thing I was talking about was the actus reus and the mens rea.
Oh yeah.
Remember, you have to have the actual act, but then you also have to have the requisite mental state too.
Right.
So actus reus talks about the act. Mens rea talks about the mental state when you're doing it. And so if you look at all the different ways we broke down the different murder elements and homicide and things like that, a lot of it depends on the mental state, the mens rea, the mental capacity of what was taking place at the time whenever the murder was committed. And that's one of the things you always look at. If you think about the malice aforethought, depraved heart murder, although that depraved heart murder is more of the actual act of what took place, but you're kind of imputing some sort of mental state based upon the act. Then you also have the premeditation, the fact that there was deliberation. You'd look at the cooling off period. That talks about mental state, because if the person had time to kind of cool off, then they must have formed a new mental state. If they didn't have time to cool off, then they didn't have the right mental state to commit one of those higher murders. It was a lesser one, like a manslaughter. So Not that it matters to the dead person again, but...
He's still dead.
He's still dead. But it does matter how we couch it whenever we're looking at these different penalties and whatnot for it, because society has basically said that all murder is bad, but some of it is not quite as bad. Some
of it's worse than others.
That's right. So, but it's always kind of fun to look at the like Game of Thrones and things like that and think about the different types of murders that maybe Arya Stark committed.
Well, things were different. I mean, it's like when we talked about our episode about the OK Corral.
Yeah.
And Wyatt Earp and all that kind of stuff. You know, if it was considered a fair gunfight, there was no penalty. You weren't charged with murder if it was a fair gunfight.
Yeah. Well, same thing with dueling. We talked about dueling when Riley was on the show. And we're talking about Hamilton and things like that. You know, dueling is what was allowed, too. And if it was a fair duel, then, you know, you'd be convicted of dueling, possibly, but not murder.
Yeah. I mean, you're not allowed to run for office in West Virginia if you're a known duelist.
That's true.
We found that. Wasn't that what that said?
I think it was.
Yeah. But the laws, though, have evolved to where there's a lot of things that aren't accepted excuses anymore, because it used to be, you look back in 1800s and early 1900s, like if somebody in a fit of passion came in and found them infragato delectus infragato, or whatever you said that was.
In the grotto.
Yeah, in the grotto.
In flagrante delecto.
Yeah, if they found them that way and they killed them, a lot of times the jury would find them innocent, and it was like a temporary insanity. He saw this, he went crazy, he shot him, he had no control over it. He's not crazy now, so he doesn't need to go to the insane asylum, so he's not guilty by reason of insanity. But that was kind of a common practice. Honor was a bigger thing. And if a man was defending his honor or something like that, then they kind of turned a blind eye to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that, because in this day and age, that just doesn't fly.
Right. I mean, I'm not advocating that.
No,
I'm not saying that should be all right. I'm just saying that as society, I don't know, it's hard to say we're more civilized now than they were then, because they were much more genteel people and spoke a lot better than we do.
Right.
But
wore frilly dresses and shirts and things.
Yes, and opened doors and said yes, sir, and no, sir, and things like that.
But I still open doors and say yes, sir, and no, sir, and no, ma'am, and yes, ma'am.
But are you talking to yourself?
Sometimes.
But you know, that they would have it that wide open where people were killing people, and they say, well, old Schmedley, he killed him, but after all, there was infragato delecto going on, so let's let old Schmedley go.
I'm going to regret using that term, I think.
I'm going to run it in the ground, huh?
Yeah. That ship sailed like the Minnet.
I looked around for cases that involve revenge killing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I found that I thought was interesting is, like in America, most of the cases that I found came down to either drugs or gangs.
Yeah.
Is where the revenge killings came from. Somebody killed somebody that was selling drugs in their corner, so they went and killed the person that killed that person. You know, or they cheated them on a drug deal, so they went back and killed them. Then you got the gangs that they were in our turf or whatever, so they're killing each other. Then I found one where it was a divorce revenge, and the guy, they thought they had a serial killer. Two or three people were killed, unrelated, the shootings, and they couldn't figure out anything that tied them together. And what it comes to find out, they were people that were involved in helping a lady get divorced from her husband like 10 years earlier.
Really?
And this guy, I don't know whatever, what finally made him snap. Now, she had already gotten remarried, and her new husband was an ex-cop. And they're the ones that put two and two together. They started seeing these names showing up and these people being killed, and they were unsolved. And they realized the connection that they were all like paralegals that worked. Like two of them were paralegals that worked at the lawyer's office.
Oh, wow.
One of them was a doctor that had examined their son because there had been abuse charges. And in one of them, they couldn't figure out how this one lawyer fit in. He had just happened to move into the office that was occupied by a lawyer that had been involved in the case, and this guy took over his office, but he wasn't ever involved in it, but he didn't know. He knew where the office was located.
Right.
And so he just went in and shot the guy thinking that was the lawyer, but it was really just a guy that just occupied the same office.
Man, talk about dumb luck.
But he ended up killing six people.
Oh, wow.
Before they called and said, look, this is who's doing it, I'm sure.
Where did this take place?
Arizona.
Hmm.
And but that was a revenge killing, but he did not get away with it.
No. I think that would qualify as a first degree murder on all those.
Yeah, they were all premeditated. He thought about it for 10 years and then went and did it.
I'd say 10 years is probably a sufficient cooling off period.
I would think so. But so most of them here in the United States are a lot more violent and more related to those kind of things. Then I found that in Europe, that the ones that I looked at there were more defending somebody's honor is what it got into. It said that that this aircraft engineer was in jail for 14 years for murder of a science teacher, and they finally quashed, which I think is overturned,
yeah,
the conviction, and concluded that he needed a new trial, but I think they decided not to retry him. But it was convicted strictly on the one member of the jury that told all the other members of the jury that this guy was a bad lad. And so they had said that he had been convicted of killing this guy because this guy had given him a bad grade he'd been one of his professors and he'd given him a bad grade, and that he had killed him for revenge for that. That was all the motive they could come up with.
Wow.
And so that one member of the jury kind of convinced him, yeah, he probably did something like that. But, I mean, that was supposed to be it because they felt like a revenge killing for your honor,
yeah,
would have been something that would cause that. And then I found another one where it was two families that had gone into business together, and the business had failed. They each blamed the other one. So they both sued each other to recover what money they could out of this failed business and to try to recover some from the other person for what they felt the other one was wrong.
Family feud.
Yeah, so it dragged out for several years, and when it was finally settled, the guy that lost couldn't take it. That he lost. He was humiliated. He was, you know, embarrassed. His wife had left him and everything else. So all his honor, his credibility had been destroyed, and he was bankrupt and everything. So to defend his honor, he went and killed not only the business partner husband, but the wife and the two daughters.
Jeez.
And then tried to flee the country, but they caught him.
Where did that happen?
That was in London, I believe, Northampton Crown Court.
Wow. I was going to say, that sounds like something out of Appalachia.
Well, it does, but it happened there.
A little Hatfield McCoy type.
Well, actually, he got away. He went to Morocco, but they had extradition with them so that he was arrested and shipped back and faced trial. But he stabbed him, which is usually considered something personal.
Yeah.
I mean, he stabbed the guy 23 times, the wife 13 times, the oldest daughter 11, and the youngest daughter only 4.
Now, a police officer told me one time, and I don't know about this, but supposedly, if you are stabbed, you are more likely to die from a stab wound than you are from a gunshot wound.
Really? But I think it would depend on where.
Well, just in general.
Yeah.
That people that get stabbed tend to die more frequently than people that get shot. Because it does more damage.
I would think, too, that it's a statistical fact that people that get stabbed die more often than people that don't get stabbed.
That's probably true as well.
I've never looked at the studies, but
I actually probably don't need to look at a study on that. I can probably agree with you on that one.
Well, you know what assuming does.
I think it makes me right on that one. See, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, if you know what I'm saying.
This is true. If your mother doesn't have any children, you won't either.
Nope, I don't think so.
All right, but here were four cases that I came across where the revenge killing was actually okay.
Okay.
This is the millionaire who gunned down the high society architect. On the night of June 25th, 1906, Henry K. Thaw, the son of a railroad and coal magnate, shot and killed famed architect Stanford White during a show at the Rooftop Theater of New York City's Madison Square Garden, which White had designed. The year before the crime, Thaw had wed a model and chorus girl, Evelyn Nesbitt, who was White's former mistress. Nesbitt had been seduced by the Gilded Aged architect in 1901 when she was just 16 and he was in his 40s. The public was fascinated with the slaying of White, whose firm had designed mansions for the Astors and the Vanderbilts. Among numerous other prominent projects, stories appeared in the press portraying the dead architect as a debauched womanizer, while Thaw eventually was revealed to be a spoiled, abusive playboy. When the case went to court in 1907, Thaw's attorney contended his millionaire client suffered from, and this is in quotes, dementia Americana, a supposed phenomenon that caused American men to become temporarily insane and seek revenge against anyone who had tainted their wives' virtue. Media coverage of the case was so intense that the jurors, for the first time in U.S. history, were sequestered for the length of the trial. That was the first sequestering, which eventually ended in a hung jury. At a second trial the following year, Thaw was acquitted on the grounds he was insane when he carried out the killing. A judge committed him to Matteawan State Hospital for the criminally insane in Fishkill, New York, but he escaped in 1913 and fled to Canada. He was returned to the United States in 1915, was declared sane, and released. 2 years later, he was tried for assaulting a young man and committed once again to a mental institution, this time in Pennsylvania. He remained there until 1924, when he once again was declared sane and freed.
Dementia Americana.
Dementia Americana. There's your defense you can use. All right, this one. This is the accused killer who inspired a Chicago character. On March 12, 1924, Belva Gartner was arrested in Chicago for the murder of an auto salesman, Walter Law, who has been found shot to death in Gartner's car, a bullet in his head from her gun, which was in the vehicle. Police discovered Gartner at her nearby apartment, her clothing bloody. She admitted to having gone dancing with Law the night before, but when asked by police what had happened to him, Gartner claimed she was too drunk to remember. Gartner's wealthy...
Heard that one before.
Gartner's wealthy manufacturer ex-husband, William, hired a top lawyer to represent her. A former cabaret performer, Belva had married William Gartner, but the pair went through a high-profile divorce 3 years later. After Belva was caught having an affair... When Gartner went on trial in the summer of 1924, her defense attorney claimed the prosecution's case was purely circumstantial, as there were no eyewitnesses or solid evidence. After a short trial, Gartner, who'd been referred to by the news media as the most stylish woman on Murderer's Row at the Cook County Jail, was acquitted by an all-male jury. Male juries of that era, women weren't allowed to serve on juries until 1939. So they were disinclined to believe that attractive white women could be stone-cold murderers. So Belva and William Gartner then remarried after the trial, and in 1925, only to soon divorce after she cheated on him once again. When Williams died in 1948, he nonetheless left part of his estate to Belva. The play Chicago premiered in 1926 and was based on the unrelated stories of Gartner and Beulah Annan, another woman acquitted of murder in the Windy City in 1924. The playwright was Maureen Watkins, who covered both cases as a reporter for the Chicago Tribune.
I've never seen Chicago.
Never seen that?
Nope.
That's what that's all about.
I didn't know that.
About women that are in jail for murder.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And that's its originations right there.
And that's actually what the play's about, too?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they don't name them, and they don't get into those specifics.
Right.
But that's what it's all about.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Now you know. The more you know. This one, number three, is called The Photographer Who Got Away with Murder. Near Calistoga, California, on October 17th, 1874, Edward Muybridge, a pioneer of stop-motion photography and early filmmaking, shot and killed a man with whom his much younger wife was having an affair. The shooting made national news, in part due to Muybridge's association with Leland Stanford, one of the Big Four, the California politician and railroad magnate. You know, Big Four with Collis P. Huntington?
That's right.
The British-born Muybridge first arrived in San Francisco in 1855, 5 years after California became a state. After trying his hand at various careers, including bookseller and inventor, he turned to photography. By the late 1860s, he had become known for his Western landscapes. In 1872, he was hired by Leland Stanford, who raced horses, Stanford University location on a site of his former stock farm, to make a photography study that would resolve a popular debate of the day. whether a horse lifts all four hooves off the ground at some point when galloping. They went through a photographic study to determine that. Stanford believed the answer was yes, but it took Muybridge 6 years to develop a photographic process capable of proving it. Now, you think he milked it? I mean, he's basically getting paid by the hour.
Yeah.
So I think that he milked that a little bit to make 6 years before, yep, you were right. Keep paying me.
I got three of my best men on it.
That's right. In the midst of his work, Muybridge went on trial in 1875 for the murder of Harry Larkins, the man who had an affair with Muybridge's wife, Flora. Muybridge shot Larkins in October 1874 in front of other people at a miner's cabin near Calistoga and afterward freely admitted to the killing. At trial, photographer's attorney attempted an insanity defense, which included putting witnesses on the stand who testified that ever since a near-fatal stagecoach accident in 1860, Muybridge had behaved strangely. In the end, the jury didn't think Muybridge was insane, but they acquitted him on the belief, not uncommon among all male Western juries of the time, that a man was justified in slaying another man who'd seduced his wife. After the verdict, Muybridge resumed his successful photography career, and in 1879, he invented the zupraxiscope, an early type of motion picture projector.
I've actually tried to use the defense that my client was suffering from some sort of malady after a stagecoach accident before in court.
Well, in West Virginia,
yeah,
yes.
It hasn't worked.
It hadn't?
No.
Huh. Well.
It doesn't fly.
Well, it did in 1874.
Yeah, like my client cannot be held accountable for this. We all know about the freak stagecoach accident that happened 10 years ago.
It nearly took a toe. This is the last one, and this was the most famous one that I had heard of. The doctor whose case may have inspired The Fugitive.
Mm.
In the early hours of July 4th, 1954, Sam Shepard's pregnant wife, Marilyn, was bludgeoned to death in her bed at the couple's Bay Village, Ohio home. Shepard, a doctor, claimed he'd been sleeping on a living room couch when he heard his wife's cries, ran upstairs toward her bedroom, and was struck from behind and knocked unconscious. When he regained consciousness, he saw an intruder downstairs and chased him outside. They struggled, and Shepard was knocked out again. The Shepard's young son slept through the entire incident. Amidst a media frenzy, Shepard was arrested and put on trial, during which the prosecution argued the doctor had been motivated to kill his wife so he could run off with a woman with whom he was having an affair. In December 1954, Shepard was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. Shepard spent a decade behind bars before a federal court ordered him released on the grounds he'd been denied his constitutional right to a fair trial. The court cited a variety of reasons, including the trial judge's failure to disqualify himself after making biased comments about the case. In 1966, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Shepard's conviction, faulting the trial judge for not sequestering the jurors and ruling that massive, pervasive, and prejudicial publicity had prevented Shepard from getting a fair trial. Later that year, Shepard was retried and acquitted. Afterward, he briefly returned to practicing medicine and then, to the surprise of a number of people, embarked on a professional wrestling career. He died from liver disease at age 46. No one else was ever charged with Marilyn Shepard's murder, although there has been speculation the Shepard's window washer might have committed the crime. The TV series The Fugitive, which first aired in the 1960s and later became a movie, is often said to have been inspired by Shepard's case.
That guy couldn't have been a very good window washer with only one arm.
Yeah, well, that was the bit in the TV show, but they never said that he was a one-armed window washer.
You sure?
Yeah. And they did have a one-armed paper hanger, and that guy stays busy.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about what we talked about. And boy, this episode is ripe with them. So many different terms.
It's got us right in the infilecto garrado.
What is stare decisis?
Stare decisis? That's when you decide to commit murder.
No.
Oh.
Did we tell you?
Was it Vincent Van Gogh picture?
Stare decisis. No. Stare decisis is the doctrine that courts basically look at past similar issues to guide their decisions now. It's also called precedent.
Oh, okay. For common law type stuff.
Yeah. Or okay. Also not even in common law type stuff, but in this day and age, whenever you're arguing something for the court, you always try to find a case where they decided something like that.
just in case.
That's right. If it's something that happened in the same court, like if it's, for example, if it's West Virginia and I look in the West Virginia Supreme Court and I find a case, that can be binding precedent because the Supreme Court of West Virginia decided that. If I find a case that's in Ohio, well, it might be something that kind of is persuasive precedent, but actually not binding because West Virginia courts would not be bound by whatever an Ohio court decided.
Right.
So
we're not going to listen to them Buckeyes.
So that's precedent. So why don't you tell me what the different degrees of murder are?
There is first degree murder.
That's right.
That has malice aforethought.
That's right.
And you planned it and you had the opportunity to do it and the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then there's second degree murder. And that's just kind of like it happened in the heat of the moment and you killed him, but you didn't like plan it ahead of time. It just kind of happened. So it's not premeditated.
Yeah, that's close. Pretty close.
And then there's the depraved heart murder.
Yes.
And that just means that you're a sicko that likes to kill people.
No, it's not necessarily. Depraved heart murder was basically where there's some sort of a serious bodily harm or injury that could happen, and you basically have an indifference about it. Let's think about if you're like shooting your gun off and whatnot, and then you end up accidentally shooting somebody, but you have a depraved heart because you're shooting your gun off with reckless abandon. So, you know,
all right.
I don't care if your team just won the World Series. You can't fire your gun up in the air like that.
That's right. Well, that's more like something that a soccer one would do. They're the crazy ones, soccer fans.
They are a little crazy.
Yeah. And in like, you know, football and basketball and stuff like that, at least if you're at WVU, you just burn couches. All right. Then you got manslaughter.
Yes.
And that has voluntary manslaughter, which means you kind of intended to do it. And then there's involuntary manslaughter, which means you did something that was responsible for somebody's death, but you didn't really seek trying to kill them.
Yeah. And the depraved heart murder is probably more closely related to the involuntary manslaughter as well, for the most part. Because
okay.
That's just kind of the way it goes a little bit.
And then there's third degree murder, which is misdemeanor murder.
Well, no.
Which we had to make up an example for.
Third degree murder is typically called manslaughter.
Oh, okay.
So misdemeanor murder is something lesser.
Oh, all right.
So what is one topic we've talked about before that is also first degree murder?
Mens rea and actus rea.
Did you even listen to what I said?
Well, I just thought sure that was going to come up. So what is one topic before that we talked about that was murder?
Yeah.
Well, killing somebody's murder.
Felony murder.
Oh, felony murder.
Yeah, felony murder is typically first-degree murder, and that's when you actually commit a felony and someone dies during the commission of that felony.
And whether you killed him or not, you're responsible.
That's right.
Now, the next answer is mens rea and actus rea.
So what is that?
That means the thought to do something and the act to do something.
That's right. And all these different crimes are made up of those two different things, the actual act that took place and the mental capacity required to do it.
Right. I knew those were going to come in there somewhere.
That's right.
So that's why I remembered them.
So it was a safe bet.
That's right. You fit them in where you can. Smoke them if you got them.
Kill them if you need to. Kill them if they need it. Come.
That's right. That's okay. Add them to my list. I'm going to start an ARIA list.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. All the people that make my list that need killing.
Should I ask who's on it?
Nope. If you're going to be my lawyer, you don't want to know those kind of things.
Yeah, and I'd advise you actually not to do that.
You'd advise me not to make a list or not to kill them?
No, not to make a list, because basically if you have a list at the top of it and it says, people I'm going to kill, and then you put names on there, and then you kill somebody and cross the name off the list, and they find that list, the police find that list, that's probably pretty good evidence that was premeditated first-degree murder, my friend.
That's circumstantial.
No, that is not circumstantial. That is about as close as you can get to getting into somebody's head and trying to figure out exactly what it is they're thinking. People I'm going to kill. People I am premeditating at this time killing.
What if I wrote it in my diary? Dear diary, I'm thinking about killing so-and-so today. If I get the opportunity, I'll have my gun with me and hopefully I can kill them.
They offended me many, many years ago, but I have sufficiently cooled off. Therefore, I have really premeditated this.
My Pontiac is in the shop, so I'll have to use my gun.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.